This is your Sunday morning wake-up call on WNRN. The wake-up call is brought to you by Tiger Fuel, serving the Charlottesville area with home heating oil and propane and famous Exxon gasolines. The wake-up call is also brought to you by The Hook, an innovative weekly from the people who really know the news on Newsstands Thursday. Now with your host, Rick Moore.
I think that's me. Welcome, everyone. Welcome to a lovely Sunday. That's right. Regardless of where you are, you're up and listening. That makes it a wonderful Sunday. Special shout out to all our friends at the University of Virginia, the parents, the family, who are finished paying all that tuition money. And let's not forget our friends and farm members in Lovingston listening on 94.7. And we're able to do that today because of people like those at 45fix.com. If you have a project but not the time, there's a simple way to find a contractor. From kitchen and bathroom remodeling, house painting, to decks and siding, it's 45fix.com. Immediate, no obligation estimates, available anytime. The number 4, the number 5, and the word fix.com. And Rusty was right on track today with that closing comment about an especially interesting show. At the wake-up call, we're going to be talking about, I think there's several ways to phrase it. I've got medical marijuana here at the top of my notes for the day. Mary Lynn Mathry, nurse, author, co-founder of POT, Patients Out of Time. Al Byrne, military vet, board of veterans for medical cannabis, co-founder of POT, both of which have many other things that I could list here. As I introduce them to the program, how's everybody doing today?
Real fine, Rick.
Great.
Excellent. Thank you both for coming in here on a Sunday. Let's jump right into it. Medical marijuana. Is that the best name for it?
Actually, we prefer to say therapeutic cannabis. Cannabis being the proper name for the plant, marijuana being the slang name that the government brought in when they started the reefer madness back in the 1930s.
Therapeutic cannabis. So I should use that term for the hour?
Sure. Humor us.
I'll probably flip back and forth. Therapeutic cannabis. Let's start. We mentioned that you're co-founders of POT, P-O-T, Patients Out of Time. Give us the mission, a little verbiage on POT.
Patients Out of Time, Rick, was an idea that was formulated in 1990 when the first 5 federal cannabis patients came together and gave a presentation at a normal conference in Washington, D.C. And that particular presentation was picked up by C-SPAN, and thousands of people saw the presentation by these patients. And essentially, what they saw on this presentation was 5 middle-aged, gray-haired folks, one sitting in a wheelchair, who were very calmly and professionally telling them how they had tried every other drug on earth for their maladies, which ran from multiple sclerosis to glaucoma, and nothing had worked for them until they got to cannabis, and then it worked. People heard that. They believed these folks. They were earnest. They were all, middle-class folks that had earned a living their whole lives and found themselves in an untenable situation and went to the government for help and actually got it. What we tried to do was to bring their message forward by forming Patients Out of Time formally as a Virginia corporation in 1995 with the mission of educating the healthcare professionals of the United States, specifically the doctors and nurses, about the therapeutic value and the clinical applications of cannabis.
And how is the couple questions tying together. You talk about it being an accepted organization by the state of Virginia. How easy or difficult was that? Because it seems to me that just cannabis or marijuana, if you put either one of them in your mission statement, that you're already going to have trouble. Is that true? Did you have that problem?
No, not at all. I applied to the Virginia State Corporation Commission. I filled out the form. I paid the fee, and I received our certificate of corporate availability very timely fashion. When we originally founded ourselves in 1995, we became a nonprofit organization called a 501c4, which is mainly it mainly has to do with more political action. We found that we were in the wrong place. However, the government had no problem giving us that nonprofit status. Four years later, we applied to transfer to a educational charity status, which we are now, a 501c3. And again, I filled out some forms. I talked to some people in the IRS, and in a very, very timely fashion, we were granted our request. No problem.
And the organization POT, Patients Out of Time, been around for how long now?
Well, officially we started in April of 1995, and we have continued on without break since then. We have we are not a member organization. Our leadership are the four now remaining legal federal patients. They're on our board of directors. Mary Lynn and I, of course, are on the board. And we have several PhD and MD other board members who serve with us. All of us are volunteers. No one's ever taken a nickel in all these years, never will. And we've been amazingly successful, I think, for our small band in changing the attitude of certainly the medical community of the United States, and I'm thinking as well the general public.
This is a Sunday morning wake-up call here on University Graduation Sunday. Congratulations to everybody out there. We're talking to Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry about therapeutic cannabis, the more slang term being medical marijuana. All right, now that we've got that out of the way, let's jump right in. What is the basic use or need for cannabis as a medical drug? Al, you mentioned glaucoma. Cancer.
Let's let Mary Lynn run down some of the clinical applications for us.
And because Mary Lynn is a nurse.
Yeah, there are so many uses for cannabis. The list actually goes on and on. Main uses are it certainly is great for stopping the nausea and vomiting that patients experience from chemotherapy, cancer patients or AIDS patients, and many other patients. Hepatitis C patients, the medications they go through get them very, very sick. It's an appetite stimulant. It's a wonderful relaxant, and that's where it's helpful for most multiple sclerosis patients, for spinal cord injury patients to help with their spasticity. Chronic pain patients find it very, very helpful. It helps with seizure control for a number of patients. We're looking into the future as they're doing research with the different let me back up. What's happened in the 90s was that we found that all humans have an endogenous cannabinoid system. We make our own cannabis-like chemicals.
Is that what that means? Endogenous?
Endogenous, within the body. And we have receptor sites. So we are wired to use cannabis. And as they look at how it works in the body, they basically, scientists have said, cannabinoids really influence how we eat, sleep, relax, protect, and forget. So the eating, we recognize with the munchies. The relaxing is where it comes in very handy.
Sorry.
But the relaxing is where it comes in handy with the spasticity problems, the muscle spasms, the chronic pain issues, Crohn's disease, irritable bowel disease, where people are having inflammation of the bowels and needing to problems with diarrhea and problems there. Relaxes the bowels and gives them more control in that regard. Sleep, it's a great sleep medication. Forgetting sometimes is not such a bad deal. That's why a lot of Vietnam vets found it very helpful for their post-traumatic stress syndrome. They say it's probably the reason why women who go through the extreme pain of labor will forget about the pain and are willing to have a child again. If they would remember the pain, women may not have more than one child.
So is that having therapeutic cannabis while in labor or after labor?
Well, actually, your cannabinoids pick up. But interesting, again, that you bring that up, because historically, one of the oldest, they learned that cannabis has been used throughout history. And they found that in an Egyptian tomb, a young girl, pregnant, and cannabis, residue of cannabis at the side. They were actually using that to help with the delivery of the child for the pain of that. And then the last thing I said was protect. And cannabis seems to be a neuroprotector. Patients actually with multiple sclerosis, the disease doesn't progress as fast. In fact, some of the patients have actually gotten better with it. They're looking that it might be helpful in preventing strokes or preventing the further damage you get from a stroke or a severe head injury, because the body, how our body responds to a trauma, it causes a lot of inflammation, and sometimes it's that inflammation that causes more damage than the injury itself. Cannabis can be used to help control that inflammation. So there's just a wide variety. Mental health reasons, people use it for depression, anxiety. We're finding a lot of young people, it's very helpful for attention deficit disorder, the ADD, ADHD, in helping calming them and helping kids focus rather than giving them some very strong psychoactive chemicals.
How is there any form of accepted testing on children with ADD having therapeutic cannabis?
Well, that's a real good question. And frankly, any accepted testing in the United States is very, very, very difficult to happen anyway. More so what they're finding with that, a couple of issues. A lot of research is going on in Brazil, and they're not using full cannabis. They're using cannabidiol. It's another cannabinoid in cannabis, not the THC, not the psychoactive one, but one that is not psychoactive at all, but it seems to be very effective for a lot of psychological issues. Currently, they're just primarily focusing on animal studies. But out in some of the states where it is legal, and we've had they've had kids with terrible problems, going from psychiatrist to psychiatrist to family physician, prescribing multiple medications, finding no results, and somewhere along the line, someone will say, you might want to try cannabis. And that's more anecdotal, but one of the big deals about that is those who are prescribing it also recognize it really is very safe. It is not going to cause any long-term damage to a child. And they've kids who have been on up to 15 medications or so with no results try a bit of cannabis and all of a sudden feel calmer, state the noise in their head is gone, are able to carry through with normal activities. School teachers are saying, you know, Jimmy's been so good in school today. What's happened?
He had some pot before he came to class. I mean, I would think that that's sort of the ridiculous remark that you get, the smart ass,
right,
you know, feedback that you get is people who may be sitting here listening to this going, you know what, okay, the guy who has cancer and has chemotherapy having some, but wait a minute, now you're going to tell me that some, you know, 8-year-old with ADD should be smoking pot before he goes to school rather than listening to the medical piece. You said it doesn't include the THC, and we already have cannabinoids in our system, or receptors for such.
We have both receptors and the cannabinoids. And frankly, a lot of there might be a lot of problems within the human body that has to do with an imbalance of the cannabinoids, and that might be the problem itself. Schizophrenics, they found, have a higher level of the cannabinoids in their body, so they might have too much, and that's why if they use a little cannabis on the outside, it might be upsetting even more to that balance within their system. But in talking about kids, one of the other things that they will, most clubs will do in initially, will introduce them to some type of oral cannabis preparation. A muffin, put it in a muffin, make some kind of a cannabis butter.
Some brownies.
And have them eat it. You know, and you don't want to make it into, you know, some people do it with the candies and make it like, oh, you know, we're passing out medicine as candy, and I don't think that's a good idea. But sometimes the edibles, it lasts longer, so it will be more stable for a child and not introduce the smoking aspect.
And I don't want to be the jerk on this side of the radio, but I want to, for people who are listening, I want to be that person who says, come on, for a little bit, so that you can provide the proper medical answer so that they can hear what the answer would be if they were asking this question, if they were sitting across from you at the brunch table saying that. So people know I'm not going to do that for the whole hour, but I do feel obligated to get that sort of attitude out there early on so that it can be properly responded to.
Rick, we appreciate being challenged.
Yeah, and you know, I want to add one thing, and this is, for some people it might be a little far out, but a lot of the kids today, I shouldn't say a lot. There are kids out there who do have some problems, whether it be environmentally or food or whatever, but the ADD and aggressive problems, and they've been treated with some medications. And we found that those medications, whether it be Prozac, Effexor, Zoloft, sometimes lead to homicidal tendencies or suicidal tendency. Very, very serious side effects. And some of the Columbine shootings and these, you know, where kids have really gone off out of control, they've been on those medications. And there are warnings because they're saying, wait a minute, this stuff might be too powerful for kids and it might not be right for kids. And so cannabis might sound way out there for a lot of people, but you don't get that kind of reaction from cannabis. It might be helpful. If it's not, no harm done. But if it is helpful, you're not going to get those crazy kind of reactions that you do with some of the other prescribable medications.
11:15 here on the Sunday morning wake-up call at WNRN. We're talking with Mary Lynn Mathry, a nurse, author, Al Byrne, military vet, both co-founders of POT, Patients Out of Time, as we talk about therapeutic cannabis. In a few minutes, we'll open up the phone line, so write down the number if you'd like, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks is the toll-free line if you're listening in Harrisonburg or Lexington or Richmond. You know, I said that I was, you know, Al, you said challenging with that sort of ridiculousness attitude. And we're going to get in a few minutes about the increasing number of states discussing reforming marijuana laws and the attempt by various organizations, including your own, to reschedule marijuana to a, I guess, to a drug so that it can be prescribed from the schedule that it's now in. Have you found that in California, I guess recently the state changed its law, but for several years you could go to, what's the proper word, a shop. If you had a drug, if you had a note from your doctor, you could go to a shop and buy some cannabis for whatever need you had. And for many people, it was almost beyond what it was originally designed to do. So that if you could find the doctor who could say, oh yeah, your tummy hurts, here's a note, go buy some marijuana. Have you found that those issues in California, for where for many people it seemed to be out of control and beyond its original attempt, to slow down your efforts?
They don't help. California is its own world, as we all know. There are 13 states which have some sort of cannabis law that allows for medical use. California being the first and the largest, it certainly garners a lot of attention. I think that the process used in California was incorrect. I believe Mary Lynn does. We spoke against it at the time. We gave our personal opinion that that method was wrong, and I still believe that method to be wrong. The situation is sort of weird. If you can look at cannabis as a drug, it is treated absolutely uniquely compared to the other 450,000 drugs presently on the market. Our belief with cannabis is it is a medicine. It should be treated like any other medicine and put into the pharmacopoeia and treated as a drug schedule properly. And then we get to the schedule process. The scheduling system in the United States is basically a numbering system that goes 1 through 5. 1 means prohibited. 5 means you can buy it over the counter. Cannabis and a few other drugs are in the Schedule 1 prohibited area, which keeps any doctor or a nurse practitioner or anybody that can write a prescription from doing so without losing their license.
What are Schedule 1? What are some other ones?
Psilocybin mushrooms and heroin and
PCP,
ecstasy. Very few drugs, really. Well, again, when we have 450,000 to choose from.
The Schedule 2 is stuff like morphine, OxyContin. Cocaine is in Schedule 2.
In California, the notion that they opened up storefronts is what they like to call them. They do call them dispensaries. They call them different names, but essentially there are storefronts where a legitimate patient, that being a patient who has gone to a medical doctor and gotten a recommendation, not a prescription, but a recommendation to use cannabis medically, can take that recommendation to this dispensary with proper identification, with proper verification, with proper education. They are sold medical cannabis grade, medical grade cannabis, and they can go about their business legally in California. The other 12 states have different methods of distribution, and distribution is always the problem when you try and treat this drug uniquely instead of just putting it into the regular mix of the 450,000 other commercial drugs. In that, it's a plant. You grow it. If you're sick, if you have MS, if you can't get out of bed, you can't grow it. Therefore, somebody has to grow it for you. Or you may be perfectly capable of growing it, but you don't have a green thumb. The distribution then is that somebody has to grow this for you, and that other somebody may not be a patient at all. So it gets rather cumbersome, and it gets all these licenses and regulations going. And after all we're trying to do is give people the option to have a drug under medical supervision that is less harmful than aspirin. So to answer your question, I guess, Rick, our corporate position on the California situation is that it is not a good situation. We would rather it be changed. We would rather it be conformed more to the normal medical issuance of any medicine.
I suppose that once it starts to become somewhat of a comedic effect on television shows and movies where the guy, you know, can walk into the storefront and buy some really good stuff, that it's moved beyond being helpful to those with a serious aspect.
Right. Let's get this one out of the way. Our organization, people like us, have been derided by other organizations, even the federal government, as shams. That we want nothing but to be able to sit in our living rooms and smoke our pot and be left alone. That's not the case at all.
And that we're using patients as pawns.
Yeah, patients are pawns. Well, our the name of our organization may be Pot, ladies and gentlemen, but it's also Patients Out of Time, and that's not a joke. When we started off with this in 1995, we had four members of our board of directors who were alive who have now left us. It is not a joke. These people need their medicine, and they need it now, and we're tired of waiting for it.
All right, 11:22 here on the wake-up call. Feel free to dial us up and ask your question, 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN-ROCKS. Online with an instant message, WNRN-STUDIO, through the AOL instant message system. Mary Lynn Mathery, Al Byrne here as we talk about therapeutic cannabis. Markets of Tiger Fuel forecast for Central Virginia and the Shenandoah Valley. Mostly cloudy, 70% chance of showers today. Highs in the lower 60s, upper 50s over in the valley. Clear, cooler tonight, lows 40 to 45, lower 40s in Richmond. Partly cloudy tomorrow, highs in the mid-60s. Right now it's clear in the valley and 57. Light rain in Lynchburg where it's 59, light rain in Richmond 57, and some rain here in Charlottesville on graduation Sunday at the university and 56.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake-Up Call, brought to you by The Hook and by the Markets of Tiger Fuel, a refreshing pause on your journey to anywhere with locations all over town. Now back to your host, Rick Moore.
And thanks for tuning in today, and thanks to Blue Ridge Graphics for supporting us. You can find Blue Ridge Graphics at Meade Avenue and East High Street, serving Charlottesville with custom t-shirts, sportswear, and professional graphic design since 1979. That's Blue Ridge Graphics, 296-9746, and at brgtshirts.com. Here's an anonymous question from a caller. Why use cannabis versus marijuana? Why use the word cannabis versus marijuana? Is it because of semantics?
Well, you know, before the current prohibition here in the United States, it was a widely used medicine, cannabis sativa, cannabis indica. And over time, we had better growers in the United States, and we actually have various medicines that would have cannabis Americana in it, indicating that they grew the cannabis here in the United States. So that's the proper name for the plant that is used medicinally. Marijuana came about because that's what the Mexicans called it, you know, and same with the reefer madness thing. It was reefer that the blacks called it, the jazz players down in New Orleans and places like that. So there was a lot of racism, you know, associated with the name, and that was more helpful in creating the scare to get the marijuana prohibition going. So we'd prefer to go to the old real name that healthcare professionals should use. We're used to using proper names.
And just as a historical fact, you notice that everybody says marijuana prohibition. They don't say cannabis prohibition. That's because back when this prohibition started in the 1930s, Congress was sold a bill of goods by what was then the forerunners of the DEA, and they invented this new plant called marijuana. Nobody told the senators that marijuana was cannabis. Nobody told them.
I see somebody's on the phone, so we'll get to that in a second. 979-0919 is calling in. The 1-877 WNRN Rocks number is available for your call. Let's go back to the rescheduling real quick. What's the process to reschedule cannabis from the Schedule 1 to something, I guess, I want to say lower or higher or whatever the proper usage would be to make it so that it can be prescribed under medical use?
The process is overdue.
But how? How do you do it?
Well, I'm going to tell you, and I'm going to tell you what the government hasn't done. In October of 2002, Patients Out of Time, in conjunction with Dr. John Getman, George Mason University, filed a petition to reschedule cannabis. That petition is a demand, in the sense that it is a request by private citizens and a corporation, Patients Out of Time and Dr. Getman, to reschedule cannabis based on the information that was submitted within the petition. This petition information can be found at www.drugscience.org. On that site, you will find 17 pages of references that equivocate out to about 50,000 pages of documents that support the medical use of marijuana through science and research that Dr. Getman had submitted to the DEA. Now, this petition is submitted to the DEA, and like I said, it was done so in October of 2002. The DEA had exactly 36 months to make a decision on this petition. Petition decision would be that they would return it to Dr. Getman or they would forward it on to their boss. Their boss is the Health and Human Services part of our government. At exactly 36 months to the day, they forwarded on to Health and Human Services with merit. Health and Human Services was then required to answer Dr. Getman's petition and the DEA's own recommendation within a two-year period. That would have made it 2007. 2007 is long past. We have received many, many excuses and reasons why this decision cannot be made according to their own laws and regulations. That's who they're avoiding their own laws here. We have waited patiently for the Bush administration to leave home. We now have the Obama administration in place. President Obama has stated that as far as HHS and the FDA and NIDA, some of these other organizations that have been stonewalling this kind of request, they are now to be they're not to play a science and research orientated process, not a political process. So we're hoping in the near future that the government will, meaning HHS, will respond to Dr. Getman's request and we'll have a reschedule of cannabis to Schedule 3.
And let me just, part of what the question is, with Schedule 1, any drug in Schedule 1 means it has no accepted medical safety, it is not safe for medical use, and it is highly addictive. To be in Schedule 2, it still can be highly addictive, but it's safe enough for medical use and has value. And then Schedule 3, it's, you know, less addictive. And that's what we're saying. Cannabis does have accepted medical value. 13 states have said so. Those pages and pages of references to other studies show there is medical efficacy for cannabis. It's safe, it has value, so it does not, by that definition, it does not belong there.
All right, we have a caller. Get your headphones on. A caller is wishes to remain anonymous, but is a recovering paraplegic. Caller, are you still there?
Yes, I am.
Thank you so much for holding on. Question or comment for Mary Lynn or Al?
Well, I just have a comment. I appreciate y'all's effort to try to get this out there with the medicine on it aspect of it, because like you said, I'm a recovering paraplegic, and I suffer from spasms. I have a lot of titanium in my body, and the cannabis has really helped. It takes my mind off the pain. It does calm the spasms, and I just appreciate that you guys are viewing this more as a medicine and not just as a party drug.
Caller, do you, you know, you've chosen to remain anonymous. Are you currently using cannabis in a therapeutic manner?
I am. I mean, I'm not trying to get in any trouble or anything like that. One of the problems with how I feel about it is that if I voice my opinion, I'm going to go to jail. And I think that's kind of crazy, too, but because, like you guys mentioned earlier, it is a plant.
One last question, if you choose to answer it or not, is as using it, the difficulty in finding it for your medical use, do you have any difficulty?
Absolutely.
Okay.
Yeah, I do.
And
I am irritable about that, but that's, you know, I live in a state right now that doesn't accept this.
All right, Mary Lynn's got something to say. Hang on.
Yeah, I was just going to say that's a terrible concern for patients, you know, especially him, paraplegic. He needs to have this medicine. He needs to know that it's been grown organically. It's not contaminated with anything. And once he finds a strain that works well, he'd like to be able to get that same strain to continue. But instead, he's got to go out to the illegal market, risk arrest, certainly not give his name, because if anyone who's employed, they could suffer from that. Certainly the police could be knocking on the door. If a person tries to grow their own, they've got to worry about who will come by. What if somebody sees that? Is somebody checking my electric bill? I mean, just the invasion that goes on to find out if someone is growing a plant. And actually, I'm going to take that a little further. One of my biggest issues currently is the vets.
Military veterans.
Yeah, military veterans. You know, we learned about it. Al is a Vietnam veteran. I was a Navy nurse during the era of the Vietnam War. And we know it's been very valuable to veterans. And frankly, and currently in Israel, they're actually using it for their military soldiers, their combat soldiers, to help in help them deal with not only the post-traumatic stress syndrome, but also some of the wounds and injuries that they come back with. So you've got a veteran in the United States now, whether in Afghanistan or Iraq, going over there, fighting for their country, witnessing the horrors of war, possibly being wounded, certainly seeing other people wounded or killed, possibly killing others, and then coming back to the United States and trying to fit into this society again and having a terrible time, finding out that cannabis helps, and then being subject to either being kicked out of the service or arrested for using a medicine that actually helps them, that's just gone way too far.
Caller, thanks so much for calling in and I guess putting a little reality on it. All right, thank you, sir.
All right, I appreciate it.
If you want to call up, make your comments. And I guess regardless of your viewpoint of the topic, as Al said earlier, Al Byrne here, one of the guests, ask some challenging questions. So that the answers, at least from Al and Mary Lynn, can be given. 979-0919-1877 WNRN rocks. Let me thank another one of our underwriters for the day. Irish Alley Restaurant and Pub, serving a variety of cuisine for lunch, dinner, and Sunday brunch in downtown Stanton. You can dine inside or on the outside patio. Irish Alley also offers a selection of local beers. Private parties up to 40 can be accommodated at the Irish Alley, a non-smoking establishment across from the Byers Street parking lot in Stanton. For more, it's golookon.com. And that sounds weird every time I say it, like I'm missing something. Go look on, but no, it's golookon.com. 11:34 here on the Wake Up Call as we talk with Al Byrne and Mary Lynn Mathry, co-founders of Patients Out of Time. Website www.medicalcannabis.com. That's C-A-N-N-A-B-I-S. And you can also use your, Google it. It'll ask you Did you spell that right? Do you want this? It's medicalcannabis.com. All right, back to Al and Mary Lynn. You talked about the states who have or are considering reforming their marijuana laws, their cannabis laws. My understanding is that the American Medical Association is getting into this in a positive manner, at least positive for you. Have they not accrediting cannabis education?
Yes, and this is a very important piece of information I think that the public needs to understand, maybe the medical community needs to understand. Since the year 2000, we have been, patients at a time, in cooperation with other organizations or entities, have sponsored accredited conferences for doctors and nurses, in that a nurse attending or a doctor attending our conferences would receive their continuing education units, continuing medical education units, for their attendance at this conference. Now, in order for a doctor to get his CME at a conference like that, that conference, its content, its faculty, its management have to be approved by the American Medical Association. The same is true for the nurse. The nurse to attend that conference, the faculty, the content, the management has to be approved by the American Nurses Association. So we have presented 5 of these conferences now since 2000. Our next one will be next April, about 11 months from now, in Providence, Rhode Island area. And the hookups we have are with medicals. The first one, for instance, was sponsored with us by the medical school and the nursing school of the University of Iowa. Our last conference, which was in Monterey, California last year, was co-sponsored by the University of California School of Medicine at San Francisco and the California Nurses Association. In 2004, I mean, think about this, folks. In 2004, we had our conference right here in Charlottesville, Virginia, and the co-sponsors of that conference were the Virginia Nurses Association and the University of Virginia School of Law, School of Nursing, and School of Medicine. This is serious business, and all of these conferences, all of that information I just gave you, came under the blessings of the American Nursing Association and the American Medical Association.
Caller, hang on for a second. Al, Marilyn, what do you mean when you say that they co-sponsor events? I'm having trouble visualizing the University of Virginia co-sponsoring or and somehow participating in a therapeutic cannabis event here in Charlottesville.
Well, they did.
That's exactly.
I mean, do they give you money to make signs, or are they giving you speakers? Are they allowing university-related speakers to come talk positively about it? What does it mean?
It means that the continuing education department at the School of Medicine specifically worked closely with us to do this. That they allowed us to, since we're the experts, we got the speakers, but they just have to validate that they are legitimate speakers presenting legitimate science. But other than that, just like they put on any conference, they're sponsoring it. This is put on by the University of Virginia and Patients Out of Time, with Patients Out of Time. We're the entity that comes to them with the content expert, just like another rehab medicine, oncology nurses could come to the University of Virginia and say, we want something for, cancer, and they'd work together to put this on. So, yeah.
All right, we got a caller. Let me fire up all my buttons. We got John from Charlottesville. Hey, John.
Hey, good morning, everybody.
Good morning to you.
My mother-in-law, back in 1997, was diagnosed with end-stage lung cancer. It was a pretty bad cancer she was dying of. And she was on a bunch of meds that caused really horrible side effects. And she couldn't get her nausea under control. So we ended up making tea for her with cannabis.
Sure.
And completely relieved her symptoms. And she was able to die in comfort and not have the side effects.
Good for you.
Of the antiemetics that were out there.
Good for you.
And I think it should also be noted, Mary Lynn worked as a counselor, but with UVA with addictions at one time. And she's got a lot of experience behind that. And hey, good to talk to you.
Well, thanks for the call.
Oh, no problem.
And that is curious. just to bring that up with addictions, in many ways, sometimes I think my nursing background is unique for that reason, because healthcare professionals, they automatically tie in, of course, the government's planned it that way, but they tie in marijuana use, and people automatically think substance abuse, addiction. And of all the drugs out there that people can get into a problem with, cannabis is the least likely to produce any, especially any physical dependence. It's low on the totem pole. When we had our treatment program, we don't have people running in there to get help for their cannabis dependence. Certainly alcohol, cocaine, prescription drugs, opiates all the time. But not
cigarettes.
Cigarettes, number one addictive drug.
Now, you will find that the court systems around the country, including here in Virginia, will force people into treatment for cannabis dependency. But that's a false choice given to, you know, do you want to do this or do you want to do that? Well, you do the less of the things the government threatens you with. But, listen to Mary Lynn. She, 20 years as an addiction specialist, and I think she'll tell you she may have had one patient come in that had a problem with marijuana or cannabis.
And John brought up another thing of the tea. That's another gentle way to introduce cannabis to a lot of patients. Smoking, the value in smoking is it delivers it quickly to the throughout the body. So people feel the effects quickly, and they can titrate. They can take just what they need. Now, patients out of time, what we'll try to advise patients is rather than smoke it, vaporize it. It's a method of heating the cannabis to the point where the cannabis vapors are released, but not hot enough to burn. So there's no smoke. You're not getting combustion. You're not breathing smoke. And we do a lot of, in the hospital, you'll get a lot of therapy that's inhaled, nebulizers in different forms. So we would suggest people vaporize so that they can titrate the dose effectively. In Canada, they now have Sativex available, which is a product developed in London. But that's an oral mucosal spray, whole cannabis. You spray it in the mouth. It gets absorbed into the blood system right away. Patients can very easily decide how much they need and take it. Oral route's another route. It's just a little bit more difficult to figure out the right dose.
And while we're with that, if we could just continue on, as Mary Lynn is saying, smoking is not the only way to apply cannabis. We've just gone through that it can be ingested. It's also used topically. It is used in suppository forms. It is used in eye drops called Canusol, manufactured in the country of Jamaica. And on the idea of smoking, let's get with that one now.
Oh, there. Let's hold on a second.
Oh, okay.
Because
sure.
I need to do this, and I got a caller. Although okay. I will say that the eye drops would really, I would think, would cause a problem if you were pulled over. 11:42 here on the Wake Up Call. Caller, hang tight for just a moment, and let me do this.
You're listening to the Sunday Morning Wake Up Call, brought to you by the Markins of Tiger Fuel and by The Hook, an innovative weekly on newsstands every Thursday. Now here's Rick with what you can find in this week's Hook.
All right, The Hook looks at local musicians who might follow other area acts to the big time. Musical experts weigh in on who they love and why you should be listening. An Albemarle County man pled guilty to a decade-long Ponzi scheme and now facing up to 48 years behind bars and millions in fines. He says he'll pay back every dime. And are the city streets safer for pedestrians? If not yet, Charlottesville says they soon will be. The Hook, reminding all graduates, always take your umbrella in case it rains on graduation Sunday. And let's thank NBC 29 for supporting us today. For your late local news, sports, and weather, not so late, it's NBC 29 News at 10 o'clock on CW 29, on the air at 29.3, Charlottesville Comcast 12, and now on the Dish Network. That's NBC 29 News in HD. That's sunrise, noon, 5, 5:36, and 11. And the man just walked in the door, so be ready at noon for Les Temps Perdue with Drew Thompson, bringing you the best from college, alternative, and underground scenes in the 80s and 90s. You'll hear the early efforts of some of today's biggest acts, as well as cult classics you haven't heard in years. And remember, at least one song during the second hour of Les Temps will be featured on the Plan 9 Pop Quiz the following week. That's Les Temps Perdue at noon, only on WNRN. All right, Marilyn Mathry, Al Byrne, are you ready?
Yep.
As we're going to take a a call from Paul in Columbia. Paul, did you hang tough?
Yeah, I am.
All right, thanks, man. What you got for us?
Two little comments. I think I heard a while back that there was a court case in the Supreme Court. The decision was based on them not allowing them to have a pot because it interfered with commerce. As far as, you know, if you were to have that, it interferes with our medical. You know, people who sell medicines now, that's one thing. I think that there's an issue. But the other comment I was going to make is that I also heard in the news very recently that we're going to have really big problems with Medicaid and Medicare funding based on our obvious tax revenues shrinking and we're having the difficulties in the economy that we're having right now. But it just seems like a no-brainer that people would embrace, you know, treatment for so many different diseases that seems to be fairly cost-effective. That's all I have to say. Thank you.
Al, Maryland?
I want to try the last part of that, the Medicaid, Medicare. Yes, clearly. Probably one of our, you know, the biggest roadblocks to getting cannabis available as medicine is the pharmaceutical industry. Patient after patient will tell us how many medications, prescribed medications, they got off of because of their use of cannabis. You know, opiates are a great example. Opiates are wonderful for severe pain, but they come with side effects. One, you know, too much, they can kill you, but anyone on opiates for long term, they need to have a stool softener because they're going to get constipated if they don't. Many get depressed with it. Many have nausea from it. So they're adding all these other medications to help with that. Along comes cannabis. They drop the opiate. They might give it up completely, morphine, OxyContin, whatever, or they'll clearly use a lower dose. Now they don't need anything for nausea. They don't need any stool softener. Their mood has been picked up. It's wonderful.
Couldn't they just grow, like, the best, you know, the stuff with the red, you know, string in it? Couldn't they just grow the best stuff and sell that?
Well, actually, it's much more sophisticated than that. In various parts of the world, not just in this country, Canada and overseas, there's been an amazing and a very long, two decades long work on finding out which strains of cannabis work best for which symptom. And this is very, very sophisticated now. There are very adequate and very precise ways of measuring this type of reaction. And in fact, in our next conference, here in a year or so, we intend to incorporate that sort of education, into the agenda for the attendees. So, I think that the knowledge base, the research, the science, the knowledge base of patients using this, has incrementally increased to the point that there is no doubt with any legitimate conversation that this is a medicine and it should be available right now. Now, on that regard, if I may, Rick, if we can stay with Virginia a second, the Virginia Tech has taken a survey yearly called the Quality of Life Survey in Virginia and asked dozens and dozens of questions of registered voters of all ages. And a couple of the questions that have been in there for the last decade or so have revolved around medical marijuana. Essentially, should it be available in Virginia to patients under medical supervision? And the answer is pretty close to 80% say yes. The Virginia Nurses Association was the first nurses association in the United States. There are now about 14 or 15, including the American Nurses Association, that have come out with public papers that said this should be available for patients here in Virginia. What we'd like to see is a medical doctor in the state of Virginia that would like to work with us to approach the Virginia Medical Association Society to see if they, too, won't step forward and look at this issue to benefit the Virginia patients so that we can take that organization and the Virginia nurses into the Virginia political arena and say, it's about time our patients had this medicine.
Well, and you would think that that there would actually be a higher than 80% percentage of people who would like this because there's a huge number of them who have been arrested and put in jail who are no longer registered voters.
Yes, that's true.
The last caller, Paul, his first question mentioned sales and income and the I guess the current financial state of America, because the topic has been thrown out there about legalizing marijuana, not therapeutic cannabis, but legalizing marijuana for the tax income that could come with it. And I guess it works on both sides. It's bringing in the money from selling it and reducing the expense of, you know, tracking people down and putting them in jail and taking them to court.
Yeah,
does Patients at a Time have a view on this?
Yeah, we've got a couple, I think. First of all, we're not at all interested in discussing legalization, but we're interested in thinking about how to save patients money. We know from our research that when the United States government grows the marijuana on their cannabis farm at the University of Mississippi for the federal patients who are on our board of directors, that it costs them about $1.25 an ounce to produce it. This same ounce on the street could cost up to $400 or $500. So it's just not a production problem. It's a problem of it being illegal, prohibited, and therefore rare, and therefore chancy, and therefore you got to pay more. But you can produce this stuff for a buck an ounce. Now, if we could roll that into the Medicare system, I think we'd save some money. On the other side of it, we have patients who are paying hundreds, if not thousands, of dollars a month for pharmaceuticals, which are breaking down their liver and killing their kidney, and they could probably produce the same effect financially for $2 or $3 and not have any of these nasty side effects. So should we see marijuana grown commercially as a farm product by professionals? Yes.
We're talking with Mary Lynn Mathry and Al Byrne, co-founders of Patients Out of Time. Discussion is therapeutic cannabis. And rescheduling the drug so that it can be prescribed for medical use. 979-0919, 1-877-WNRN Rocks. You know, we were talking about legalizing marijuana for whatever reason. Virginia Senator Jim Webb recently said that legalizing the drug should be, quote, on the table. Positive, negative?
Senator Webb is a wonderful senator. I'm so glad to see him there. The only criticism I have, if the senators listen, is that, sir, I understand your commission would go on for like 18 months. We can't wait 18 months, sir.
What is the current presidential administration's viewpoint on this? Has there been any, public talk about it from him? Any under-the-table conversation about this?
Well, we sure hope to see more, but his Attorney General, Eric Holder, did make the comment that the Obama administration would not be, under the Obama administration, we will not have raids on the compassion clubs in California and
other
states.
But they just had one recently.
And then they did. I know. So many people are kind of going, what's up with that? Because the statement was a wonderful message, and then following that. So we don't know if it's a matter of diehard DEA agents who love their little war on cannabis, and they're not going to give up until absolutely made to, and the changeover of staff hasn't occurred, or what. But hopefully that will – again, the other thing that Obama has said when he clearly pushed out that they want to base policy decisions on science, not on ideology. So, it's certainly moving in the right direction, but, we need to see a little bit more.
All right, let's take a call from Billy in Albemarle. Hi, Billy. Billy, are you there with us? All right. Try again, folks, 979-0919. I see the line is ringing right now. We'll see if that's Billy calling back. Braylon, you mentioned some work in, and I can't find all my notes now that I've scratched them all through, but some, is it Sativex?
Sativex.
Sativex, which is a cannabinoid spray.
Mm-hmm.
And I'm reading last Sunday's Daily Progress, or two Sundays ago, I guess, and in it says there's someone who's against your work who says, Steiner believes pro-medicinal cannabis advocates are afraid of Sativex, which he said could be the nail in their coffin. Where does that come from?
It comes, I hate to say where it comes from, because it doesn't make sense. But no, and especially patients, they would welcome that. Any patient wants, if something works, they want to know they can get it and know that it's safe and reliable, that they're going to get the same thing every time. And the way it is now, you can't, if anybody's growing from seed, the plant will be different from one to the next. These people aren't professional growers, et cetera. Sativex would be wonderful. It's a full complement of cannabis and made to work in the mouth. There actually are clinical trials going on in the United States now with severe pain for cancer patients are now in clinical trials using Sativex. So years from now, it might be available. And that's the point. Years from now, something might be available. These patients suffering now, suffering from intense pain or dying, they really need the medicine right now. Right. Along with that, the other thing that people will say is, and you know, Marinol is available. Marinol is synthetic THC. It's available in a pill form. One, it's very expensive. Two, you have to take it orally, and its effects aren't experienced till later, and it is pure THC. So another argument the government, or fear factor the government tries to throw in is, cannabis today is much stronger than ever before, you know, and look out, we're going to have all these terrible problems we didn't have before because it's 10 times stronger, it's 100 times stronger. Well, you know, there are some strains that are higher THC content, but Marinol is 100%. Almost 100%. It's got sesame seed oil in there, too. So you've got almost pure THC, which is available and can be prescribed, or cannabis, which has not that high a THC in content. And it's also got other cannabinoids in it that alter the THC. They kind of dampen down its effects, so it's safer in the long run.
All right. We are listening to WNRN Charlottesville and WNRS FM Sweetwater Amherst Lynchburg, Marilyn Mathry, Al Byrne from Patients Out of Time. We got a call from Matthew who's on the road. Matthew, you still with me?
Yep, sure am.
All right, man, fire away.
I just got a couple comments. I heard a quote one time. I've been a long-time cannabis user, more recreational, but I am in the creative field, and I feel it helps with that. But I was told a comment one time. If someone handed you some seeds and told you that they could become the next cash crop, they could heal, they would make stronger fibers, you can make t-shirts out of them, they would create jobs, what would you do with those seeds? And to deem them illegal, I've always found somewhat problematic. But my main concern is being in the creative field, it seems to help with that. However, going out looking for jobs, the legality of it, you know, you have to be able to pass a drug test. And I've also suffered from depression. A lot of people, you know, it's the nature of a human being to have ups and downs in their emotional state. And a lot of times people turn to alcohol or sometimes to other substance that can be harmful and addictive to deal with those issues. And, you know, I've been using for cannabis for almost 10 years now, and I can safely say that there is no addiction. I smoked cigarettes for, I don't know, a year, and within that year I was up to a pack a day, and that was the hardest thing to quit. I have since completely quit. I still use cannabis, but when it comes time to find jobs and stuff, I can easily quit and, you know, be safe for a drug test for a job. There's absolutely no addictions that go along with it, and, I really appreciate what these people are doing. I know there's a lot more medical use for it out there.
All right, man. All right, Billy. Excuse me. All right, Matthew. Thanks for calling, man. Keep listening while you drive.
All right.
We also want to take a moment as we finish up and thank Blue Ridge Mountain Sports. They are your local source for camping and backpacking supplies, kayaks, canoes, and outdoor footwear. Blue Ridge Mountain Sports is in the Barracks Road Shopping Center here in Charlottesville. You can find them at Wintergreen and in Richmond at brms.com. All right, just about a minute and a half left as we finish up with Al and Mary Lynn. Where do you go from here? Both of you have said several times about it needs to happen now. It needs to happen soon. All these committees, et cetera, it takes too long.
But yeah, patients do need the medicine now. You know, we had mentioned earlier the 13 states that have passed it. There are states all over now that are kind of waking up and looking at bills as we speak. North Carolina, New York, New Jersey, Minnesota, Ohio, Texas, and I'm forgetting
Maine, New Hampshire.
Yeah, more Maine. Actually,
but when you say that they're passing laws, what does that mean? You still can't use it because it's a federal issue.
Well, again, as a patient, I do believe that Obama will be serious about this, and we've got the petition coming through too to change it from Schedule One. I think the point here is, the more states that are demanding this, the more citizens that are saying the time is now, the government at some point has to start listening. And it has changed. If you notice, this year, I think more and more people are talking about it more realistically, more openly. The science is there. This petition before the before the Department of Health and Human Services, it needs a decision. And it's so clear. The evidence is there.